from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Fighting continues in Fallujah tonight, but U.S. troops and their Iraqi allies have now pushed into every part of the city. American commanders are talking mission accomplished and expressing relief at the casualty figures. 38 Americans dead, more than 1,200 insurgents killed. But the significance and impact of taking Fallujah is still debated. And rebels have launched a sobering counteroffensive around the country with police stations overrun, oil facilities ablaze, and U.S. forces bombing other Iraqi population centers. Gauging success is a complicated business in Iraq. Tonight on Point, judging Fallujah, what it wins and what it doesn't in the war in Iraq. We begin tonight in central Fallujah. Scott Peterson is a correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, embedded with the 3rd Marines in their fight for the city. I asked him what he's seen in Fallujah today.
Well, today has been yet another remarkable day in Fallujah. It ended, as many other days have, with Spectre gunships pounding suspected mortar positions, especially in the south of the city. But also we're seeing more determined and specific raids by Marines units. One raid that I went on this morning took place before dawn. In fact, they were trying to check out two warehouses just in the southern section of the city that they suspected sniper fire from coming from. In the end, we didn't find anything on that one, but it was kind of an example of how they are specifically going after certain houses, certain locations, and trying to track down insurgents one by one.
Scott, how would you describe it? Is the battle for Fallujah over or not?
Oh, it's certainly not over. It's nowhere near over, I think, in the sense that there really are many, many more variables to play themselves out. I mean, there's no question that American forces do control, control is the wrong word, that they are in many, many places in the city, a network, if you will, kind of a spider's web over the whole city. So there's no doubt about that. But in terms of what they actually control, that doesn't mean that they necessarily limit the movement. I mean, I understand from intelligence officers here and from some commanders here, too, that there are concerns now about tunnels that have been made between houses, which enables insurgents to pass easily between them. Also, they're concerned about sewer system networks, for example, and are going to try and cut those off because they really have been surprised at how insurgents have been able to move around, considering how many Marines have eyeballs on the deck, how many of them are watching through binoculars and elsewhere for any movement. Because, of course, because there are no civilians around, it means that they're really, the Marines have the run of the place in terms of setting up operating positions and fire points and that sort of thing.
Scott, much of the world is getting the impression that Fallujah is captured, that it's a mopping up operation now. You're describing something a bit different. How much longer do the soldiers you're with anticipate the fighting there may go on?
Well, I think that they're expecting this level of activity for quite some time. And the reason is because as these days have gone by, the Marines have been learning a lot more about their adversary, just in the same way that the insurgents have been learning a lot more about the Marines. One example in particular, I think, is quite illustrative of the dilemma. And that is that 2 days ago, a Marine forward base moved into a house, and little did it know that just two doors down, there was actually an insurgent house. There were more than 30 insurgents in that house. Now, for 2 days while the Marines were there, those insurgents kept completely quiet. They didn't attack. They didn't move. They didn't show themselves in any way. And then all of a sudden, bang, they let off a rocket-propelled grenade barrage. That started a firefight, and the Marines came out on top, killing at least they say 15. I saw 10 of those bodies yesterday. One of the largest, I think, concentrations of insurgent dead that we've seen in this city, in fact. But the point of that is that the insurgents really have not shown themselves unless you go and knock on their door specifically. So you can be searching every other house in Fallujah, and you may miss every other insurgent because they are in the other house, and they may not show themselves unless you literally knock on that door.
Scott, what does the damage to the city look like? Is it leveled? Is it largely intact? How would you describe it?
Well, I'd say it's certainly been smashed. I mean, some sections, there really have been some quite severe firefights that have been completely destroyed, even flattened, if you will. Sometimes, entire buildings have been brought down. It really is a scene of devastation. I wouldn't compare it to worse sections. For example, You know, the Green Line that once separated the East and West Beirut in the 1980s, you know, that was in a much more built-up urban setting, and in those cases, they really did use a lot more mortar and artillery fire in specific areas. Here the city is, and where the attacks have occurred, have been much more spread out. The damage is therefore much more kind of uniform, if you will, across it. But you do come across areas where, you know, entire sections are destroyed. I mean, it all looks like a war has occurred here. There's no doubt about that. But it also, you know, not every single building is on its knees or crumbling either. Some sections in some areas really do remain untouched, but that will change as Marines continue to go through those areas hunting for insurgents.
How long does it look like it might be, Scott, until civilians in significant numbers could return to Fallujah and carry on normal life there?
Well, I think that the American commanders want that to happen as soon as possible. They want this to be seen to be, you know, kind of handed over to Iraqi security forces as soon as possible. But I don't think anyone's dreaming that that's going to be happening tomorrow. And also, it's going to change the dynamic as well for the Marines here in a big way, because up until now, they've pretty much been able to consider that anyone out on the streets is an insurgent or is hostile, and they haven't engaged according to the rules of engagement unless they actually have or are seen to be carrying a weapon. But most of those very few people who are seen on the streets have been carrying weapons and have been engaged. Once civilians begin coming back to the city, then that will complicate the Marines' task much more, because it will be very, very difficult to separate those who are part of and loyal to the resistance from those who are just plain normal Fallujans who want to kind of get back to their lives. So what they will hope is that as a buffer, there will be an Iraqi force there which will do the job for them, allow the Marines to keep a much more lower profile, even perhaps pull out in the coming few weeks or months. So that's what they're hoping for in terms of the game plan.
Scott, when you look out on Fallujah today, does this operation look like a success to you?
Well, I think that so far it's proven to be a relative success in the sense that there have been very, very few casualties on the American side, and they were expected to be very high. Also, in terms of gains, the territory is controlled, at least nominally, by American forces. And then we also have a huge quantity, almost unquantifiable amount of weaponry, heavy weaponry, mortars, artillery, shells, the kind of things that are used to make explosive devices that have been really taking a toll on American forces across Iraq. All of these things have been destroyed in really vast, vast quantities. So that's got to harm the insurgents to some extent. But that said, the kind of things we're seeing also show how pernicious this insurgency will continue to be. And there was an American Marine killed by a sniper today. Also one of the people, an Iraqi man, going to a food distribution point, he was also killed by a sniper. You know, that's a not-too-subtle message that really you shouldn't be working with the Americans or Iraq's interim government if you want to keep alive.
Scott Peterson, thank you very much for joining us. Be safe.
Thank you.
Scott Peterson is a correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. He spoke with me from central Fallujah there. We're talking tonight about the fight in Fallujah and what it means to the wider war in Iraq. You can join the conversation. Does the U.S. push in Fallujah feel like a tipping point to you? Do the images of American troops taking the city buy the U.S. more respect and security, or more resentment and resistance? And with the taking of Fallujah, is the U.S. effort turning a corner in Iraq? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Wilmington, Delaware, is Mark Bowden, correspondent for the Atlantic Monthly and author of Black Hawk Down, the best-selling story of American troops in urban warfare in Somalia. Mark Bowden, thanks for joining us tonight.
You're welcome, Tom.
Also with us from Ann Arbor, Michigan, is Juan Cole, professor of Middle East history at the University of Michigan and author of Sacred Space and Holy War, The Politics, Culture, and History of Shiite Islam. Juan Cole, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Very welcome.
Mark Bowden, first to you. You've said very clearly in recent days that it was absolutely necessary for the government in Iraq and for U.S. forces to take Fallujah. You said the assault was overdue. How does it look to you as you see the news coming in tonight?
Well, it's obviously gratifying that the Marines and the soldiers have been able to accomplish retaking most of the city without more loss of life. It remains to be seen, obviously, how successful this is. But I will say that if the United States was going to be moving toward holding elections and establishing any kind of civil society in Iraq. They could not tolerate whole cities under insurgent domination.
And as of now, Fallujah is not one coal looking on. I don't know how you felt about this in advance of the assault on Fallujah. Tell us, what did you expect? And when you look now, does this look like a strong advance for the U.S. and interim Iraqi government cause?
Well, I don't think there was ever any doubt that the U.S. military could take a city of 250,000. Of course, probably by the time they took it, it was down to 30. So that it's militarily successful is not a surprise to me. I'm not entirely sure that the casualty rate is heartening. The official figures are over 200 wounded. I don't think that's probably a good sign. But in any case, the real problem for me with this operation is its political fallout. And I perceive the Americans to have gotten themselves into a very difficult situation by how they've set things up in Iraq. They are having national electoral lists pretty much run on confessional or religious bases. So if the Sunni Arabs boycott the forthcoming elections, which they may well, you know, they're very mm-hmm. sullen and angry about this thing, then they won't be represented in parliament. It won't be a legitimate parliament. And then that parliament is going to craft the new constitution, and the Sunnis won't have a place at the table at that. And you could have this guerrilla movement go on for years.
But is it any different if Fallujah hadn't been retaken? It certainly wouldn't have participated in the January elections, scheduled January elections. Is there not now at least a chance of that happening?
Well, I don't deny that it's a very difficult situation that the U.S. is in. Certainly there were very bad characters in Fallujah. We've heard about all of the explosives that have been captured and blown up. But, if you're thinking about if the reason for going in was to hold elections and have the Sunni Arabs participate, then it was a fool's errand because it will produce the opposite effect. If the reason for going in was to settle a security issue, then that's something different. But the likelihood is that you could have had more successful elections without going in because, okay, so you write off the 50,000 or 80,000 people who were still in Fallujah. Have the elections in Mosul and Baghdad and elsewhere where there are millions of Sunnis.
Mark Bowden, you've said that this was, in fact, a contest for moderate Iraqis. How does it make that argument for us?
Well, I think that I think most people in Iraq are waiting to see who's going to win. And I think that even more than alliance with kinship or religion or ideology, people are just trying to survive. And if you live in a neighborhood where just showing up to work or voting or doing anything in sort of cooperation with the effort to hold elections could get you killed, people aren't going to do it. And so I think that while there undoubtedly will be fallout from any, and there always is from a military action like going into Fallujah, that you have to demonstrate that you're serious about holding elections and you're serious about security. And this insurgency, while it is pernicious and is likely to last for a long time, can't hold large pieces of ground and is not gaining on the effort. So I think it's a matter of perception. And I think taking Fallujah definitely reinforces the perception that that these elections are going forward and that there's a chance that civil society and independent government can be established there.
There's a lot more we're going to hear tonight. Still a lot of complexities in this question. Mark Bowden, Juan Cole, please stand by. We have to take a short break. We're talking tonight about the significance of Fallujah, what it wins and what it doesn't in the war in Iraq. You can join the conversation tonight. Does Fallujah feel like a tipping point in the war to you? And tipping to what? Has the battle for Fallujah been what you expected? And does Fallujah show the capacity of U.S. military power or its limitations? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the significance of what's gone on in Fallujah in the last 7 days. U.S. military commanders saying tonight that they are largely in control of that city. We heard earlier from Scott Peterson of the Christian Science Monitor, still a lot of shooting going on and plenty of surprises there, but a feeling of satisfaction that they've moved in, they're in every part of the city now, things are going their way. Meanwhile, outside Fallujah, lots of problems in Iraq tonight. We're trying to sort out exactly what's been gained here. My guests tonight, Mark Bowden, correspondent for the Atlantic Monthly and author of, among many other terrific books, Black Hawk Down, the story of U.S. troops taking very tough fire in Mogadishu in Somalia. And from Ann Arbor, Michigan, University of Michigan, Juan Cole is with us. He's professor of Middle East and South Asian history at the University of Michigan, author of Sacred Space and Holy War. Juan Cole, what about Mark Bowden's view here that there's a contest for the Iraqi, massive Iraqis who are wondering who's going to win out here? And as long as the insurgents held Fallujah, it looked as though they might just keep on taking territory. They might be on track to win. So we couldn't count on the moderate middle of the Iraqi population, if you will, to come to the U.S. side. What do you say?
Well, first of all, I have to say that I have enormous respect for Mark Bowden and his wisdom about military things and a great fan of Black Hawk Down. I would just say that this situation is a little bit more complex. Iraq under Saddam was a lot like apartheid South Africa. The Sunni Arabs were like the whites. And the Shiites and Kurds were like the black Africans and, of course, were disenfranchised, beaten down, so that this minority could be on top. And the Sunni Arabs are between 15% and 20% of the population.
Right.
So what the Americans have done is to invade the country and disenfranchise them, knock them from their perch. And there's just no way they're going to be happy about that. And many of them have taken up arms to fight against it. And just imagine if the Eisenhower administration had invaded South Africa to empower the African blacks and dethrone the white Boers. What do you think the Boers would have done to our troops? Well, it's the same thing in Iraq. So we're just not going to be winning over large numbers of Sunni Arabs anytime soon unless we have a lot of carrots with our stick. And so far, no carrots have been offered to them. We went in with an extreme de-Ba'athification program that we fired high school teachers who had been members of the Ba'ath Party. We didn't do that to Nazi Germany.
And, of course, the Ba'ath Party was Sunni-dominated.
I'm sorry?
And, of course, the Ba'ath Party was Sunni-dominated.
Yeah, they were mostly Sunnis. So what you basically did with the message to the Sunnis is you are now going to be the slaves of the Shiite Ayatollahs and the Kurdish warlords. What you had is going to be taken away from you, and there's going to be a punitive attitude. So you're going to be fired from your jobs. You're going to have nothing.
Well, let's say you're right, Juan Cole. What does that say about Fallujah? Would you then have just gone on allowing it to be in the hands of Sunni insurgents and foreign insurgents? What was the alternative to doing something about it?
Well, you could have not allowed it to get to where it was. I mean, Fallujah in the summer of 2003 was a soluble problem. But by March of 2004, it was no longer a soluble problem. And it's very clear to me that the vast majority of the townspeople joined in the defense of the city last spring. So, you know, this idea that we went in to save the moderate middle or something, that's simply not true. They hate us. They want us out of their country. And there is no likelihood anytime soon that they're going to love us. Now, maybe if we were smart about it, we might be able to bribe them into coming back in. But so far, we haven't done a very good job of that.
Mark Bowden, Juan Cole paints a picture where you've got a part of that big Iraqi population that's just not going to be wooable. The very fact of the U.S. Invasion and talk of democracy, they see as working against them. And no matter what power the U.S. displays, they're not going to come around. What does that do to your thesis?
First, I should thank Professor Cole for his kind words about me and my work. You know, there's no doubt that there's a hardcore of Sunnis who have not been, by this American military action or at least by the current plans, been disenfranchised. They certainly are going to be given the opportunity to vote. Whether they choose to do so is up in the air. No doubt certain extreme members of the Sunnis and the former Ba'athists will never reconcile themselves to a democratically elected government because they will be in a minority. But my understanding has been, and perhaps Professor Cole knows more about this than I do, but my understanding has been that there has been a fairly sizable number of Sunnis who have at least been debating running slates of candidates in this election in January, and that there is hope that there will be some Sunni involvement, if not right away, down the road. And I think that giving these radical Sunnis, and not just we're not just talking about Sunnis here, we're also talking about radical Islamists, if you allow them to control cities, large pieces of territory, I think you make it, it just makes sense to me that you make it less likely that more moderate-minded Sunnis and those who are waiting to see what's going to happen are going to hazard taking part in these elections in January.
Juan Cole, what about it? Is there a scenario that, that you can imagine where, despite the bitterness at being ousted from their privileged position, the Sunnis would buy in mass buy into a democracy in which they're a minority?
Well, as I said, they'd have to be bribed into it, in my view.
With what? With new community centers? With positions in government? With what?
Well, Iraq is an oil state. The way oil states work is the opposite of our system. You know, our politics in the West, in America, is really about how much the government is going to tax us and what we're going to get in return. And the politics of an oil state is how much of the oil money that the government owns are they going to dole out to us, and how quiet are we going to be about the government in return? And that's the way Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, all these countries, are governed. And we might as well just admit Iraq is an oil state. And, you know, my friends who've traveled around Iraq say, you look in the Shiite south at a city like Al-Hilla, you got these dingy little apartments and dingy little buildings and tiny little streets. You go up to Ramadi and Fallujah and those places where all the trouble is, these people have huge mansions. So we have to convince them that we're not going to take their mansions away from them. Of course, many of those have already been destroyed in Fallujah. But we have to convince them that, that they're going to have a place at the table in the new Iraq, that they'll get a share, a fair share of the oil money, and there will be opportunities for them.
But a fair share is not what they're used to. They're used to a disproportionate share. Is it possible to satisfy the Sunnis without alienating the Shiites, and then everything's up in arms?
Well, I think it would have been possible to satisfy the Sunnis. For one thing, you know, you have to make the argument to them it's not a zero-sum game. You know, that if you grow the economy sufficiently, and Iraq has the potential to be a fabulously wealthy place, then everybody's going to increase their wealth. You know, Saddam was keeping those people poor. So you have to make the argument to them is that you'll be part of a growing enterprise that you'll benefit from. And just to demonstrate to you that that's the case, here's some money right now. And, you know, the problem is that, as I said, they went around firing all these Sunnis and sort of giving them the impression that that their day is over with. And we've alienated so many people. And I'm quite frankly, I don't know if it's possible to get them back now. I mean, we're talking about tipping points. The real question is, have we lost the Sunni Arabs for years to come? And will more and more of them join the opposition? Because, you know, one of the reasons that these guerrillas can operate in Mosul and all over the place is nobody's turning them in.
Right. And in that case, presumably, that means unending war.
Yes. Well, it means long-term conflict. It becomes Lebanon.
Juan Cole, Mark Bowden, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Washington, Judith Yaffe. She's Iraq specialist at the National Defense University in Washington. She's former CIA Middle East specialist. Judith Yaffe, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks for inviting me.
We're hearing a couple of different views tonight, or different angles on what's going on in Fallujah. Much of the city now has the presence of U.S. troops. Some fighting still going on. It appears that they will eventually take control there. But what exactly this means in terms of where the struggle in Iraq goes, a matter of some debate. How do you see what's been accomplished there and what might not have been?
Well, I always hate to disagree with Juan Cole, who's a good friend, but I think I have a little different take. I think one of the things we have to remember is, the Sunnis had everything and everybody else had nothing, and now they think it's all going to be reversed. I think it's a different kind of a question, which is we tend to view politics as something which is doable. You can play the game. You can barter for influence. You can form a party. You can, you can find solutions through the either you call it the marvelous art of compromise, or Philadelphia or Chicago big city politics.
Okay.
Remember, Well, the Iraqis don't know this. They don't know how to play politics. They don't understand how the system works. Frankly, I don't understand how this new voting system of theirs is supposed to work. But I think the point is that they don't know quite what the options. And right now, the only option in anger, in fear, and with some satisfaction, of course, is the killing option. You have to get them beyond that to where they can see how they can make the system work to their advantage.
I have to say, it sounds like you're more in line with the thrust overall of what Juan Cole was saying than you might think.
I never disagreed totally with Juan. I guess maybe today I'm just being a little bit more. I'm trying to be a little bit more optimistic. But let me say this: this event, what we did in Fallujah, is not a tipping point. Relative success, yeah, but relative to what? Relative to the fact that the rest of the country may be dipping in and dipping out, and I think we're going to see that same pattern for a while. You just don't end insurgency, and we have more than one going with taking over this town and cleaning it out, getting rid of these bad guys. Some of them move someplace else. Some people get encouraged by this. It takes more than a military solution. It's got to be matched with a political solution, which I think Ayad Alawi was trying to do. He wanted to negotiate. It didn't work up there.
With the Fallujah leadership, such as it was?
Exactly. But one has to keep moving in that direction. You don't just stop and say, gee, this didn't work. Gosh.
Judith, a simple question tonight. Do you think the U.S.-led effort in Iraq is winning or not as we speak this evening?
No, it's winning and losing. I think I just can't deal with those terms right now.
We're too far.
We're in the middle of something,
mm-hmm.
And I think it's too early to say. And I don't know what winning and losing means. Winning would mean it's not going to end with Fallujah. It doesn't end with elections. But this is a long term process. Juan has it absolutely right there. This just doesn't end over one single event here or in January when there are elections. I think we have to expect that there are going to be difficulties, there's going to be ups and downs, there's going to be violence that's going to continue for a while. It just doesn't go away overnight.
Boy, given the reports that we're hearing from around the country, that certainly seems to be the case. Judith Yaffe, Juan Cole, Mark Bowden, stand by. I want to invite our callers into this conversation. A lot are waiting to join us. Diane's calling from North Andover, Massachusetts. Hi, Diane. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you? I have a couple of comments and a two questions.
Yeah.
The first comment, the woman who was just speaking just stated that they don't understand, that the Iraqis don't understand politics. They do. They understand their type of politics, not ours. They
sure.
just don't accept them.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, if you take Fallujah by force, as we have done, and just level it to a pile of rubble, what have we achieved?
Well, I don't know if it's a pile of rubble, though. There's a lot of rubble.
And where do the 300,000 people that used to live there go? You know,
these are tough questions. Let us pick that one up. Mark Bowden, you've watched the reconstruction effort ever since the initial invasion. American commanders have made a lot of being ready to go into Fallujah and rebuild right away. Can that work? Presumably there'll still be some kind of resistance effort there. The track record isn't so great. Everybody's left town. Can this be rebuilt on a timetable that will satisfy people there that it hasn't been a disaster for them just logistically?
Probably not. I think that it remains to be seen how effective this military effort has been on quashing the insurgency in Fallujah, how many of these cells remain and how effective they can be. I suspect they can be fairly effective at disrupting things and making trouble, but I think that reconstruction efforts will go ahead, and even though it won't be ideal, the situation won't be perfect, it'll be better, in my opinion, than having the city of Fallujah controlled by this insurgency.
Better in that the lesson will have been delivered, that you, to the broader mass of Iraqis, that these insurgents cannot defy the government in Baghdad and the United States and get away with it, so get on board with the U.S. and the interim government.
Precisely. I mean, I think that as long as the insurgency remains an underground hit-and-run movement that can blow up things and kill people, they will remain a very powerful disruptive force in Iraq, and I think that's inevitable. That's a given at this point. But what I think you have to fight to avoid is the perception that this group is gaining ground, that they are taking cities and holding cities, and that there's some chance that some portion of Iraq is going to remain under their control, or that they're going to basically throw off the American and British forces and somehow regain control of their country.
And Judith Yaffe, how do you see this issue? Is there an element of collective punishment for Fallujah here and having become an insurgent stronghold? If the recovery is going to be difficult, and surely it will, given everything we've seen in Iraq, is the rebuilding more important, or is the lesson, don't oppose Baghdad, more important?
Well, if the lesson were don't oppose Baghdad, then you're in the same position that Syria was in 1982 when Hafez Assad destroyed the city of Hama and killed everybody in it, which may have been as many as 20,000 people because they were opposed on, and they were religious extremists. So that's not the answer. The answer is you rebuild, you help them pull their life together again. The point I wanted to make was that you can't win this insurgency just by military means. You have to have political carrots, and you have to have a willingness to win over the hearts and minds. I hate to use the term, but the point is that the only way you ultimately going to defeat these insurgencies is by having the communities turn against these guys. Stop giving them safe haven. Don't give them support.
So do you think this will have worked in that direction or the opposite?
I don't know.
Oh.
You may convince some people that this is not the way to go. You have to convince the Iraqis that they have more to lose by supporting this kind of activity and that there is something to gain from being part of the system.
Juan Cole, how about the stern lesson here? We've seen all kinds of counterattack is one headline I'm seeing on today in Mosul, in Bakuba, and elsewhere. Is the lesson don't let your community get into insurgent hands or you're going to face trouble? Is that effective?
Oh, I don't think people think at that rational level. Right now they're angry. There are guerrillas who are part of this struggle, resistance against U.S. Presence, who have moved elsewhere and are conducting operations elsewhere. There are also local men who used to be Republican guards or other special units who know how to operate militarily, who maybe were not coming out very frequently. They're weekend warriors and who are angry at this moment and have struck in places like Mosul or Bakuba. I think people are in the whole Sunni heartland are just furious. A lot of them are angry about this, and they resent the U.S. presence. They see it as a foreign, illegitimate colonial occupation. They feel about it rather as the Americans felt about the War of 1812 when the British burned down the White House. So it's to be expected that there will be a rise in violence as a reaction. With regard to politics, the thing that worries me is that the Association for Muslim Scholars, which is, according to opinion polls, among the more popular of the Sunni religious parties,
right,
was urging a boycott, and the Iraqi Islamic Party was urging Sunnis to participate in the elections. Now, the Iraqi Islamic Party, as a result of Fallujah, has withdrawn from the Alawi government and is reconsidering whether to join in the boycott.
Looks like it could be more boycott. We've got to take a short break. Juan Cole, Judith Yaffe, Mark Bowden. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking tonight about the meaning of Fallujah and what has just happened there. It's not over, but a lot has gone on. All of Iraq is watching, all of the Middle East, all the world for that matter. We're joined tonight from Wilmington, Delaware by Mark Bowden, author of Black Hawk Down, correspondent for the Atlantic Monthly. From Ann Arbor, Michigan by Juan Cole, professor of Middle East and South Asian history at the University of Michigan and author of Sacred Space and Holy War. And from Washington by Judith Yaffe, an Iraq specialist at the National Defense University in Washington and former CIA Middle East specialist. You can join us tonight as well. How do you think the images of fighting and destruction in Fallujah are playing across Iraq and across the region? Do these images buy more respect for the United States or more resentment? Has Fallujah been punished or liberated or both? And are there more Fallujahs awaiting American soldiers in Iraq? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Rick is calling from Boston. Hi, Rick. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I guess I've been listening to this discussion, and I feel as if somehow that you folks are looking at the trees and not the forest.
Okay, paint the forest for us. What do you see, Rick?
Well, I think if you start back from the beginning of this, when the United States entered Iraq, and I think clearly that we entered Iraq to liberate Iraq, there were three major groups: the Kurds, the Shia and the Sunni.
Of course, yeah. So
the Kurds were naturally going to be inclined toward what we're doing.
Yeah,
they were organized. They'd faced a tremendous horrors from Saddam Hussein.
And the Shia had been oppressed, so they were up. And what about the Sunni? That's also
right, exactly. And they were the majority, and they naturally expected
the Shia. Mm-hmm.
The Shia would naturally have expected, if we were going to have any kind of fair distribution, given that they were the majority, they would naturally be in a very good position.
Rick, take us to your point. Are you saying the U.S. had to clobber the Sunnis? There was no other way?
Well, I think if the Sunnis were naturally going to be unhappy, we've spent time, I think, making some headway with the other two groups. You know, there was a lot of discussion that the Shia were going to be in rebellion, the Muqtada al-Sadr, who really was a minor player in many ways.
Rick, your bottom line, do you think the Sunnis can't be won over?
Fallujah. I don't know that the Sunni hierarchy is going to be won over. They've lost. I mean, they've lost a lot of power. There's a certain amount of power. I don't agree with Professor Cole that it's, at this point, it is a zero-sum game to a significant degree. We're not going to convince the Sunnis that we're going to grow the economy. You know, this is
why not?
The
why not?
Of the Democrats. Fallujah has a long history of being a focal point of Sunni power and of Sunni resistance to outsiders, like to the British.
And tonight it's a wreck. But let us pick it up. One call, the sense that there was no winning over the Sunnis. They were, after all, the shock troops, the favorite group of Saddam Hussein. We were bound to be in opposition to the Sunnis, and we just have to live with it.
Oh, no, I think that's quite wrong. In fact, many Sunnis suffered under Saddam and were very eager to see him gone. Even many members of the Ba'ath Party were just dying to get rid of Saddam so that they could have the Ba'ath Party back. He had hijacked it for these thuggish purposes. And there were many Sunnis before the war who negotiated with the United States. The entire units of the military just took off their uniforms and went home because they were promised safe passage and that they'd be treated well. So I think we had a moment where we could have pursued policies that reassured the Sunnis. We allowed ourselves to be advised by Ahmed Chalabi to adopt punitive measures mm-hmm. towards the members of the Ba'ath Party, who were largely Sunni. And we fired thousands of them. We disbanded the army, which hurt the Sunnis were in the upper ranks, hurt them more than anybody else. So it didn't have to be this way. We could have worked at winning over the Sunnis, and we could have made it more than a zero-sum game. You know, Iraq, the per capita income in Iraq had been reduced to that of a third-world country. The Iraqis could be rich. They could be like Kuwait. So you know, if they could get their act together. So I just disagree with the caller. It's a disagreement about the facts of the matter. I think it's certainly the case the Sunnis could have, you know, been treated differently.
But tonight, as we speak, that oil that could make them rich is burning in the north and in the south from attacks today. Alex is calling from Appleton, Wisconsin. Hi, Alex. You're on the air.
Hi. Just wanted to make a quick point. The analogy that I would make here is with what's happened in Colombia within the last 10 years, where you had a major, well-funded, organized insurgency in the FARC. The administration in Colombia before the current one said, "We'll sit down, we'll talk at the peace negotiating table, and see what happens." The insurgency got bigger, stronger, better organized, and was able to destabilize the country more.
So you're saying, fight, don't talk. There's a time for fighting.
And what happened was the current administration said, "Take away this safe zone," went after them hard. The guerrillas are now completely on their heels. And in the terms of the hearts and minds, the Colombians have gotten the hearts and minds of along with the military, saying, okay, now there's respectability in the government.
There's respect for it by being tough. Alex, thanks for your call. Mark Bowden, this is your turf. I don't know what this insurgency in Iraq might be properly compared to. Do you see a parallel to Colombia or anywhere else, current or historic here?
Well, I do think that, I don't really see a strong parallel with Colombia, and I can't think of another one anywhere else. But what did happen in Colombia was you saw a tremendous shift in popular opinion. When in the previous administration, the Colombian government attempted to negotiate with the insurgents, that was President Pastrana, mm-hmm. he had tremendous popular support. And the people were marching by the millions in the streets begging for peace. And in his administration, when he made ridiculous concessions to these insurgents and they didn't bend and they refused to negotiate, the populace turned against even the idea of trying to negotiate with these people.
Right.
And they elected the current president with a, you know, a huge majority. And I guess it goes to my point that I think the vast majority of people just want to live normal lives, whether they're Sunnis or Shias or Kurds. And, you know, there are extremists in any group. There are, you know, political ideologues and religious extremists in any group. But I think the vast majority of any group consists of people who are looking to see what direction to go that will give them the best shot at a decent life. And I think if you, by crushing this insurgent stronghold in Fallujah, the whatever this means in terms of the ongoing insurgency, the occupation forces have sent a message that said, we intend to prevail. We intend to hold these elections. You can join with us, or you can continue to side with these underground rebels who are going to be doing these hit-and-run murder missions for as far into the future as we can see, or you can try to create a society that works for you. And I think that message will hopefully be the one that ultimately prevails.
Judith Yaffe, I may be oversimplifying here, but I hear a difference between Mark Bowden and Juan Cole. I wonder what you think. Mark Bowden saying what has often been the American view of the world, and who couldn't relate to it, that most people just want to live a good, peaceful life, as prosperous as they can. If you give them the chance, they'll take it. Juan Cole saying there's history and bitterness here that may be bigger than the logic of practical material interests. It's not going to be that simple. How do you see it?
Well, it's not going to be that simple. I think we made a couple of mistakes, and Juan has pointed to two of them. One, you know, dissolving the military entirely, and putting 450,000 people out of work in a country that has 75% unemployment rate, debathification. Those things were seen by the Sunnis as specifically targeting them, punishing them, and making them feel as if they had no future, so many wanted to leave. But I think the problem, it goes deeper than that, and that all through this, everyone's been talking as if you could do democracy mathematically, that you're either a Sunni Arab or you're a Shia Arab or you're a Kurd.
Okay.
Iraq doesn't divide like that. There's a high rate of intermarriage, Arab and Kurd, Sunni and Shia. Families and tribes have both elements within their family.
Fair enough, but everybody knew who was on top and who wasn't.
Yeah, the point is, it's not to look at them as doing things for or personal sectarian or ethnic reasons necessarily. Those things come into play, but the Iraqis are also nationalists. And these Sunnis of Fallujah and the Shia in the south, they're very proud. And they are Iraqi nationalists, and I think that's especially true in this area for the so-called center now, where there is a struggle for identity as well as security issues. The problem is we at first made a big mistake by stripping them of their natural leaders and people who were willing to work with us to bring the Sunni on board.
And, of course, at this
point,
you
don't go back. Once you've broken that dish, it's hard to go back and say, oh, we made a mistake, sorry.
As Colin Powell famously said, he who is now departing. And, of course, there's a question, it seems to me tonight, whether that nationalism cuts toward alliance with the interim government in the U.S. or, in some quarters, that nationalism is clearly cutting toward the insurgency right now. I want to get another call here. Sarah's calling from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hi, Sarah. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
I was just wondering, it just seemed to me the last couple of days as I was listening, to me this sounds eerily like Vietnam with the military tactics and the ability of the insurgents to just sort of melt away into the population, and we can't do anything about them until they show themselves, which is what I was hearing earlier. And it was just interesting, you know, we've heard rumors of tunnels and people hiding either voluntarily or involuntarily, these insurgents. And it just seems that we're making another Vietnam out of this, or we don't understand the people, so we're using the wrong tactics.
Sarah, we've got a rough phone line with you, but let us pick it up right there.
She's got a great point, if
yeah,
I may.
Judith, please.
Which is tactically, yes, it sounds like Vietnam because the tactics are the same, and how an insurgent fights, how you fight an occupation force, but I wouldn't go any further than that and saying this is like, Iraq is like Vietnam. You're not fighting a single insurgency with a unified opposition command that is clearly focused on the goal. That's not Iraq.
But does that make it easier or more difficult, this kind of networked insurgency?
It makes it different. Not easier, not harder. It makes it different. The one is not going to be easier than the other, and dangerous. What would be worse is if and when they come together, that you find that, for example, the Sunni and Shia extremists start to cooperate together, or some of the other insurgent groups do more than just operational cooperation, which I think we have seen. You get that on a broader scale, and then we are really in trouble.
Mark Bannon, how do you see that military situation? Of course, things popping up all over the place in the recent days. Since the U.S. troops went into Fallujah, you've got Ramadi a mess, Mosul a mess, American commanders knocked back on their heels there, Bakuba, Baghdad, these attacks on the oil pipelines. In practical terms, never mind for a moment the hearts and minds battle, but in practical military terms, has the U.S. gained ground or lost ground? What do you make of all this fire popping up everywhere else?
Well, I think it's predictable. I think that it would have been very surprising to me if the insurgents who had been using Fallujah as a bastion had all decided to stay there and try and battle it out with the United States Marines. They're not stupid. They know that they can't win that fight. And so they dispersed as much as they could, and it makes sense when you can't fight an enemy head-on to try to make as much trouble on the perimeter and along its supply lines, or in this case, around the country, as you can. I think that it's predictable. I don't know how long or if they can sustain it. I think that we're going to be dealing with insurgent attacks for the foreseeable future.
Does Fallujah make it harder for them to sustain it, the loss of that kind of permanent base, semi-permanent base?
It does, yes. It definitely weakens the insurgent movement. It doesn't mean it's going away. But I think more importantly, and the point I keep coming back to, is I think it definitely has put a dent, it ought to put a dent in the faith that any Iraqis have who were hoping that this insurgency was going to somehow throw off this occupation.
Juan Cole, we've just got a minute left. You've been the toughest critic in a way here tonight. Looking forward, we are where we are now. What's your advice to Washington, to the interim government, about how to handle this whole situation to try and push toward the most successful outcome?
Well, my real concern is the outcome of the elections, because if I'm right, you have 275 seats in parliament, and 10 of them are occupied by Sunni Arabs. And then that parliament negotiates a permanent constitution for the country without the Sunnis being properly represented. You've got a huge political disaster well into the future. And I have no idea how you avoid that scenario, but it is a very possible scenario, and some serious attention needs to be given to how to avoid it.
And that, Fallujah may or may not have helped address. Juan Cole, terrific as always to have you. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Juan Cole at the University of Michigan. And Mark Bowden, author of Black Hawk Down, correspondent for the Atlantic Monthly. Always wonderful to have you. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
And Judith Yaffe at the National Defense University. We very much appreciate your time tonight. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.